Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. If you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I will then be able to turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. If you wish to get some comment, testimonial, feedback, and you do not wish to call, you may send us an email. You may email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you through email, we'll address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred, so that you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. We greatly appreciate whenever anybody chooses to do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service, and that is just infinitely easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you. You can also, I haven't mentioned this in a while, but you can also download from that same webpage a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have called in and been stepped through the worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those, they can serve as a powerful tutorial for you on how to get maximum use from these tools in the shortest amount of time possible. And that is our purpose. Our purpose is to make these tools available, as Dr. Rice would have said much more commonly in the past. He's kind of faded away from it, but he says our goal is to make these tools available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet, whether they have any money to be able to afford to pay for them or not. And in the process of doing that, as we teach these tools, we learn at deeper and deeper levels and gain deeper and deeper benefit for ourselves in the application of these tools. So if you are getting benefit from the tools and you want to take your work to the next level, one of the best things you can do is decide to teach these tools. And my father used to say, see one, do one, and then teach one, and then the skill will be yours. See one, do one, teach one. And of course, you can amplify the benefits to you by teaching more than just one, but teaching it repeatedly and fielding questions and responding to questions from the most open, allowing space you can manage, which many times results in needing to say, I don't know. And if you're in a position where you can say, I don't know, I truly don't know, now you're open to learning something new. If you are convinced that you know and you're just fine with what you know and how you know it and when you learned it, and there's no going back and there's no stretching that mind because you're shutting the door to learning. So we encourage people in this work to open the door to learning, open the door to recognize, as the most recent exercise that we were covering in the Way of Mastery says, open the door to the realization that you don't truly know what anything is or is for. And that as you build that awareness of that level of ignorance, again, in this work, ignorance is not a negative, it's simply a description of a lack of knowledge about a certain experience. And also in this work, knowing has to do with direct experience, not an intellectual concept. And so, as we were invited to in a previous lesson, whenever anybody begins talking about enlightenment, total peace, constant love, total love, perfect love, awakening, enlightenment, if anybody around you is talking about those kinds of things, ask yourself as honestly as you can manage, do I know this truth in my life moment to moment? And if not, then stop thinking about it or discussing it with people. Find a way to step into an experience of those traits, qualities, energies. So the last time we were looking at the Way of Mastery, we were on lesson 14, and we had been reading in the section that's titled An Exercise to Develop Your Awareness. And this is the exercise where you look around you and whatever your eyes first land on, you simply relax the body and you stop thinking about labeling it, and you just settle into the realization that you don't truly know where this thing came from. You don't know who was the first human being that had an idea to create something like this. You don't know where the raw materials that make up this object come from. And the invitation is to find a way to just rest in awe and recognize your complete ignorance, that you didn't make this thing. You can't find even the moment when it first came into your awareness. You don't know when another human being first had the thought that gave rise to the process that made this thing come into existence, to be formed by its raw materials into the form you're seeing now, whether that's a chair or a lamp or a stapler or a pen. And this book invites us to pause in the reading and spend 5 minutes repeating the exercise with several objects. And those objects could be your hand or the ring on your finger or your kneecap or the socks on your feet. And it reminds us, don't press the brain into trying to figure this stuff out. Don't think so hard. Be in observation. Be in allowance. Be open to the state of awe. Relax the body. Perhaps you choose to sit in the chair as though you were a Christ and just look and go through the kinds of questions we've given you about, do I really know where this came from? Do I really know how the thought of it arose in a human mind to begin with? And then it asks us, after we've done that, how did it go? And it reminds us this exercise is very, very similar to an exercise that Yeshua was given by his Essene teachers when he was fairly young. And it says, I would spend hours, not just 5 minutes, but hours, literally hours doing this exercise. I would do it in my father's house. I would do it in the synagogues. I would do it in the streets of the villages. My favorite time and place to do it was just at dusk, as the sun would begin to set. As it did so, I observed the colors and felt the changes in the temperature of the air upon my skin. As I looked upon the breezes dancing across the grasses and as I heard the song of the bird, I would be with these things, just as I asked you to be with the objects in your room. And hours would go by. And I would sit, and I would try to look at each and every star in the sky, asking myself the same questions. Questions like, quote, can I discover the source of this thing I am seeing? Where did it come from? How could it be? What has brought this forth? And as I began to sense what I was calling these things into my experience, I began to discern what brought me true joy. Not just a moment of pleasure or satisfaction, a sense of security, but that which elicited true joy. I discovered that what always brought joy was when I was willing to surrender into the awe of mystery, to penetrate the thoughts, perceptions, attitudes, and definitions that the world had taught me. Penetrate, to look through, to not just accept the label, tree, rock, robin, snake, person, Bob, Larry, Elizabeth, Susan, to look through and penetrate through the thoughts, the perceptions, the attitudes, the definitions, the labels that the world had taught me. Again, the idea is I'm asking to be shown the shimmering radiance of the energy of creation that has and is giving rise to everything in my experience. That actually we are an energy field within an energy field within an energy field. And we are creating the images, the perceptions, the labels, the judgments that we are experiencing as we interact with these energy fields. You know, we are trained endlessly. We're trained rigorously to stay in the conscious logical and the definition and the label and to treat the pictures in our minds as though they are the actuality of life. But think about this. Remember I was talking about this book, The Brain That Can Heal Itself or Change Itself. And, you know, decades ago, a creative individual had the idea that these people who were blind from birth might be able to perceive in a way that we call seeing, even though their eyes aren't working. And so he found a way to hook up the output of a camera and send it into a person's brain. And that person was able to perceive in a way we would say seeing, but you can't see if you don't have eyes the way we use our language. But you can perceive, you can quote, see, close quotes. And the process is so instructive for us because we think that we're in here in our brains looking out through our eyes and perceiving things. We think the eye is seeing something. But as Dr. Michael Rice likes to talk about so clearly over and over again, the eye is just an antenna. It receives information. It receives energy impressions. And then, just, you know, in the average brain that's wired in what you'd call a natural or normal way, that set of signals that is received by the eye get translated, transformed, or transmitted back to the occipital lobe of the brain, back near the base and the back of the brain. Excuse me, I was trying to look for something on my phone to back this up, and it backfired on me. So it got, in the healthy brain, the signal gets transmitted from the receptor, which is the antenna, which is the eye, gets translated into neuronal activity and stimulates a part of the brain in the back of the brain called the occipital lobe. And when you understand that it's just electrical signals, and somebody says, wait a minute, we have an idea about how this works. What if we take those signals and we change them and input them into the brain through a different venue, maybe the tongue, maybe the hearing? Well, what part of your mind could wrap itself around the idea that someone can see and describe something, even though they've never had eyes that function? They were born without eyes that function. And then all of a sudden, if the signal from some camera, which is just receiving light and having it hit some you know, photographic film or electronic, you might call it film or transducer. And then we convert that into electrical signals, and then we pump that into someone, not through the eye, but through the tongue or the touch, or, and then they can describe what's outside of them. It's mind-boggling. Now, I'm talking about an old dentist chair with a vibrating back and a tangle of wires and bulky computers made of a castaway parts combined with 1960s electronics. This thing weighed 400 pounds. And a person who was blind from birth, never had any experience of sight, sat in the chair behind a large camera the size of those used to be used in television studios at the time, great big camera, so big you couldn't lift it, you know, hold it up to your eye or something. It had to be on a big stand. And that person would scan a scene in front of him by turning hand cranks to move the camera, which sent electrical signals to the image of the image to a computer. The computer processed them, and then the electrical signals were conveyed to 400 vibrating stimulators arranged in rows on a metal plate attached to the inside of the chair back. So the stimulators rested against the blind subject's skin. The stimulators functioned like pixels vibrating for the dark part of the scene and holding still for the brighter shades. This was a tactile vision device, as it was called. And it enabled blind subjects to read, to make out faces and shadows, and distinguish which objects were closer and further away. It allowed them to discover perspective and observe how objects seemed to change shape depending upon the angle from which they were viewed. The six different subjects of the experiment learned to recognize such objects as a telephone, even when it was partially obscured by a vase. Now, this was in the 1960s. They even learned to recognize a picture of an anorexic supermodel named Twiggy. Everyone who used the relatively clunky tactile device had a remarkable perceptual experience. They went from having tactile sensations to, quote, seeing people and objects. And with a little practice, the blind subjects began to experience the space in front of them as three-dimensional, even though the information entered from a two-dimensional array on their backs. And if someone threw a ball toward the camera, the subject would automatically jump back to duck away from it. If the plate of the vibrating stimulators was moved from their back to their abdomen, subjects still accurately perceived the scene as happening in front of the camera. So why am I reading that? I'm reading that because here's an exercise in the way of mastery that says we are tricked, we're trained, we're conditioned to this fantasy that we know what something is, and that we know that it's outside of us and separate from us. And we're asked to do this exercise to develop a different level of awareness. Our brains are capable of perceiving things differently, even if parts of our brain are damaged, even if our optic nerve is not functioning or the eyeball isn't functioning. Other parts of our consciousness and therefore our physiology, which arises inside of our consciousness, can develop and take over this act of perception that we're talking about. So this book's talking about surrendering into awe and mystery with the goal of penetrating through, seeing past the thoughts, the perceptions, the attitudes and definitions that the world has taught us. To look at a plate and not just see a plate, but to see mystery unfolding before me. To sit and look at a stair, a star, a bug, a tree, a hand, a pen. To sit and look at a sacred text. To sit and look at one who is diseased, who sits at the side of the road covered with dust, and to see no difference between them and every other mystery of life as it's unfolding in front of me. To see all of it as pervaded by the same mystery, the same presence of creation's energy of love. The book goes on and says, I began to sense that love, that energy of creation, pervaded me. That the very body mind that I had thought had been me, and here he names it, Yeshua ben Joseph, was arising out of mystery. Out of mystery. You are arising out of mystery. Out of a mystery that you did not create yourself. Out of a mystery that Yeshua, Jesus, did not create himself. I finally came to realize that even I was a mystery with which I was in relationship. I decided to be in relationship with my own self. What we refer to as the body mind, that peculiar sense of awareness in which you say, quote, I am, close quotes. I decided to be in relationship with the totality of my capital S self, mind, spirit, soul, emotion, body, and be in relationship with it with the same sense of awe and mystery that I felt when I looked upon the farthest of stars deep into the night on a quiet hillside. And when I did that, that changed everything. I gave up my self-definitions. I did not see myself as simply a carpenter's son. I did not see myself as a Jew. I no longer saw myself as a student of the Essenes. I came to see myself as the mysterious extension of something beyond my comprehension. I saw myself as a sunbeam to the sun, my capital S self, my true self, as an extension of love in form, as a sunbeam to the sun. I saw my capital S self as the very mystery of the Creator's presence being unfolded in the realm of manifestation. I saw that all that I thought, even down to the body, was temporary. I saw that whatever it was that was birthing me was eternal. It was an ongoing foreverness. And that if I could just rest in that, if I could abide in that, if I could but return to that, even prior to every breath, return to the awareness of that prior to every breath, then I could tap into the very power of creation itself. And I could get out of the way and get out of the way and get out of the way. And I could keep diving deeper into mystery upon mystery upon mystery. And as I read that, I think about Joseph S. Benner's book, The Impersonal Life. And I mention that, again, because it's so relevant to this topic, but also because you can get access to it from the christmind.info website, christmind.info. And while it's wonderful if you patronize those people and want to buy the book, you can decide whether or not you want to buy the book. You can see the book and read it by going to christmind.info. And you'll start to see the very kind of thing they're talking about here in that book by Joseph S. Benner, The Impersonal Life. He wrote that book under the pseudonym Anonymous in 1914, and he had the belief that the words in that book were directly from the Creator. But one of the key things, as we were reading that book in the support group a number of years ago, one of the key things is it talks about how no actual thought, nothing other than, as Dr. Rice would talk about it, resonance stimulated content, or content that's in a set of brain cells being stimulated into activity, is not thought. It's just resonance. It's like a tuning fork that gets banged and held close to something that's tuned to the same vibration, and the second thing starts to vibrate. And in the book with Joseph S. Benner, it talks in one segment very, very clearly about how in the human mind, no thought actually takes place. Nothing other than this vibration, nothing other than the resonance of the intellect that Way of Mastery would say has been shoved full of trivialities. Nothing other than the intellectual trivialities that have been stored in the brain is active until after the person realizes that all true thought comes from above, comes from the one mind, comes from the Creator itself. And when you wake up and recognize, as this book is saying, that you are a mystery arising from mystery, that the energy of life is pervading you and giving rise to you, and that the very body-mind that you think you have is arising out of mystery, out of a mystery that you did not create yourself, you might finally come to realize that even you are a mystery within which you have a relationship with that mystery arising from mystery. That what you say, quote, I am, close quotes, is a relationship with the source of creation expressing in form. The text here in the Way of Mastery says, I came to see my capital S self as the mysterious extension of something beyond my comprehension. That's what led me to talk about Joseph S. Benner's book. I cannot comprehend my source, and yet I'm an extension from whatever sourced me. I see myself as a sunbeam to the sun. I see my true self as the very mystery of the Creator's presence being unfolded in the realm of manifestation. Another way to say that is you are the effect of the extension of the creative energy expressing in form. The text here says, I saw that all that I thought, even down to the body that I think is so solid, is temporary. I saw that whatever it was that was birthing me was eternal. And yet, what I think about, what I experience in time, began in time and it will end in time. And if in that process I could let myself rest in the realization that what birthed me is eternal, that there is an ongoing foreverness that I'm a part of. And if I could return to that prior to every breath, then I could get access to the very power of creation itself. And I could just get out of the way, get my bloated nothingness out of the way, as Emerson talks about, get out of the way, get out of the way, get out of the way, and keep diving deeper and deeper into mystery upon mystery upon mystery. What the text says here is, from that time, I never let my mind rest from that day on. I never once decided that I was done. I never defended a single perception that I had about anyone or anything. And by using time wisely, I cultivated, over time, the willingness and the ability to seek first the awareness of this kingdom within me. Even to the point that I was doing it prior to every spoken word, every gesture made with the body. They offer a quote here, quote, "Father, I rest in you. What would you live through me in this moment? Let me just witness it. Let me feel it. Let me taste it. Take me ever deeper into your mystery. I want all of you. Life, creation, love, father, mother, birther. Father, mother, God, life, love, creation. I want all of you." The text goes on and says, the way of mastery is the willingness to use time differently. There must come a point in the journey of each individual in which the head bows and the thought emerges, quote, "I want only the truth of creation, and I no longer care what it takes. I no longer care what is required. I submit to the mysterious force that life is, asking only that I be transformed into the perfect field of awareness through which capital L love flows open with allowance and no obstruction." Close quotes. The text goes on and reads, "What you will discover in the end is that the only obstruction is fear and some expression of fear. Each time you begin to set fear aside and choose to bless the world from the perfect holiness of your awareness of your union with your Creator, each time you dare to be so arrogant in the eyes of the world as to be the presence of Christ, each time you relax the mind and the body and recognize, quote, of myself I do nothing. Something is living me, and it is to that which I surrender," close quotes. Each time that happens, you will cultivate a way of being in the world that is not here. That is, it is not within the perceptual mode that makes up the world. You will be different. You will look the same, but you will not be the same, quote, you, close quotes, that the world has known. You will speak as you've always spoken. You will know your social security number. However, there will be a definite sense that you live and yet not you, but that that one, life itself, consciousness itself, creation itself is living you, is expressing through you. Somehow, inextricably, unexplainably, you are being allowed to be the field of awareness that gets to witness capital L life living as you. And you will know that it is sacred. You will know that it is beautiful. you will know that right now, wherever you are in this moment, you are the embodiment and the expression of mystery. Capital L love, forever extending itself. You are the very joy of creation. And you will continue to be so throughout all of existence. There will never be a time when you will cease to be. But by choosing to surrender defense of the perceptions you have come to identify as you, by choosing to release the grip on the fears you believe are justified and the judgments that you believe are true, as you surrender your grip on the world you have made, creation will flow through you. But think about what that's saying. When I grasp a judgment, when I value the thoughts that lead to fear, when I defend my beliefs, I grasp, I tighten, I tense, I constrict the flow of that loving creative energy through me into the world. And instead of this free flow of easily identifiable loving energy flowing from me, I send out ripples of tightness and tension and anger and fear and contraction and doubt and confusion. This is why in Lesson 3 it explicitly works to try and teach us that every time we judge, we send out a contracted, constricted, distorted energy. We don't let the creative energy flow through us wide open and unrestricted, free-flowing. Instead, we constrict. We restrict it, we distort it, we load it with false beliefs about fear and inadequacy and judgment of all sorts and flavors. Think about everything that you've been taught to value. And come back to the very beginning of the book before it even starts the lessons, and it says, if you would just lay on the altar of your heart everything you think you know, cancel everything you think you know, cancel everything you think you need and want, and find a way to understand that nothing that's ever happened to you was bad or wrong or in essence immoral. It was just the flow of life. And look lovingly upon it as the creation. And you, in that moment, when you look upon it differently, you transmute its impact on you. When you look on it through the filters of fear and resentment and bitterness and judgment, you transmute its impact on you away from the wide open experience of the love, capital L love, and the mystery of life and the joy of creation. The text goes on here and says, what you will discover in the end is that only the only, absolute only obstruction to the flow of the loving energy of creation is fear and some form of expression of fear. I used to say all of the stepchildren of fear, guilt and shame, blame, condemnation, anger, hurt, confusion, griefs. All of those are just flavors of the one energy of constriction that we call fear. Constriction away from the creative force of life itself, what we call love. Each time you begin to set fear aside and choose to bless the world from the perfect holiness of your awareness of your union with the Creator itself, each time you dare to be arrogant enough in the eyes of the world to be the present of the Christ mind, each time you relax the mind and the body and recognize, of myself I do nothing, Something is living me. And it is that energy of creation, of love, expressing through me. It is to that which I surrender. And then you will cultivate a way of being in the world that is not here. That is, it is not within the perceptual mode that makes up the world. People will still see you as a body. People will still say, okay, this is who you are. This is what you do in life. You'll speak as you've always spoken, and you'll know your social security number. You'll know what house to go home to. You'll know which mate you share living space with. However, there will be a definite sense that you have made a change. You live and yet not you, but that one life, love, creative energy is living through you. You are being allowed, unexplainably, you're being allowed to be the field of awareness that gets to witness life itself living as you. And you will know that it is sacred. You will know that it is beautiful beyond words. You will know that right now, wherever you are in this moment, you are the embodiment and expression of mystery, love, capital L love, creative energy, forever extending itself. You are the very joy of creation. And you will come to be throughout all of existence. There will never be a time when you will cease to be. By choosing to surrender the defensiveness, defense of the perceptions and thoughts that you've come to identify as yourself, by choosing to release the grip on the fears you believe are justified and the judgments that you believe are true, you open yourself to be that wide open, transparent conduit for the loving creative energy, and creation will flow through you. Of myself, I do nothing. I merely witness the flow of capital L love through me. I use time wisely to cultivate the perfect remembrance of the actual world, the real world of life, of love, of creation, of energy extending. Time and space do not imprison me. This body is not me. I use it as a tool to fashion and shape that which in this world can extend love into any moment. Close quotes. The text goes on and says, as we come to the end of our second adventure into the way of transformation, we notice what thoughts, what pictures, what items you have chosen to write in your journal. Notice the feelings that are occurring in the body, even now. Notice the thoughts, the pictures, the images that you may hear echoing through the field of your mind. You abide nowhere but in the infinitude of the Creator's presence. Mastery comes when finally you choose to release all attachment to fear and any of its stepchildren. And in perfect surrender, you release the dream of the dreamer itself. And you allow the mystery of life, capital L life, to live you. Wide open, totally clear, perfectly clear conduit. Without obstruction, without fear, in perfect knowledge that, quote, I and my Creator are one. There is nothing I have to do to get to be with the Creator. There are only some things I need to release so that creation can get me. Beloved friends, heed well what has been shared, at times in a very subtle way, in this lesson. We would highly suggest, not just one Yeshua, but we, this infinite team of conscious minds, we would highly suggest that you read this lesson several times in different environments at different times, perhaps 3 in the morning, perhaps at midnight. When your spring comes to warm the earth again, take time to find a small hill where you can gaze at the stars and perhaps abide with them differently than you have in the past, using time differently. Review this lesson when you're feeling harried or stressed. Look at all of the different sets of circumstances that you have believed have the power to limit your choice or distract your energy. Read this lesson in those circumstances when you are sad, when you are lonely, when you are bothered. When the room is filled with too many friends, take it out and sit on a park bench and read it. Or on the benches of the great malls where many beings come to worship their god of stuff and they exchange golden coins for shopping. Shop instead for a new quality of awareness, a new way of being, that which penetrates what you believe you are seeing and reveals to you the perfect harmony of the kingdom, the presence of the love of creation. Dear friends, no one will ever make this journey for you. No one you see, no one with whom you live will ever make the journey to the heart of awareness of creation for you. So the invitation is to get clear about your priorities and seek first the kingdom. Above all, know that you are not alone. We are indeed with you always. We extend the love of creation to you. We see you as the love of creation expressing in form. We await your decision to choose to perceive yourself that same way. Peace then be unto you always. Amen. That is the end of lesson 14. And the invitation is, as always, to question everything you think you know, put away everything you think you want or need, and find a way to dismantle every negative judgment you have ever created about anything in your experience of life. 563-999-3581. I just stopped the reading and looked at my phone, and somebody said we were cutting in and out, so perhaps that wasn't being heard by everyone. I welcome any feedback about that. Were you hearing? Were we having technical difficulties? We've got about 6 or 7 minutes left. My hope is it makes sense to bring in things like The Impersonal Life by Joseph S. Benner. My hope is the various ways we can add a slightly different angle to what we're working on, what we're talking about, what we're ushering ourselves into an experience of, will help change the rate at which each of us can understand. That's the point. Understanding, having a different experience, being open to learn, being open to be taught in each moment by life itself, by the flow of events, being willing to put ourselves in a different angle for observation, put ourselves into the space of questioning everything we think we know. So and somebody put a hand up, I'm assuming everyone can hear. I will remind us that the Journey's Dream podcast titled On Your Mind is another free resource. And today, the first episode of two with Dr. David Gruder was published. It's only about 34 minutes. And in it, he's talking about one of the projects he has right now that he has great passion for, titled The Center for Enlightened Self-Sovereignty. And that published today, and with luck, they've edited it nicely, and the second half will get published next Tuesday. And so in this first half, he's talking about some of the difficulties that have arisen in our culture, and in the second half, he'll talk about the proposed path to find solutions. He doesn't have any pat answers, but he does have some ideas about how each of us can grow in our focus to be part of the solution and to develop specific tools that help us be a part of the solution. And he's creating a platform online where anybody who wants to be a change agent or wants to learn about what it would take to become a change agent for the better in life, in our culture, in this Western world, can plug in and be of assistance to others and get assistance for themselves. And if you want to explore that website, it is thecess.com. And that stands for the Center for Enlightened Self-Sovereignty.com. And as he mentioned in the interview, and as you'll find if you go to that website, you can join, and it's free to join initially. And as it develops and expands, there may be an opportunity to invest to support it, but he and his wife, Lori Morse, who we had on the podcast on the 23rd of last month, are just thoroughly committed to trying to help, you know, pay it forward, so to speak, to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful, and to help people wake up to the mystery of their true nature, very much in line with what we're reading about here in the Way of Mastery. And tonight is a Tuesday, so there will be a support group from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. It's absolutely free to join us if you're so inclined. There's a very loving community that's developed there, and we invite you or anybody you think might have an interest in joining us. I know that sometimes people call the show and ask, well, how can I get more involved? And that's one way. You can either attend an online support group that Susan Bingham runs, or you can attend an online support group that I run, or there are probably others that are listed on the whyagain.org website. And or you can start your own, because that's supporting people in starting their own support groups was the original primary purpose of this work, of this Mind Shifters Radio, now into its 14th year. So thank you all for being here. Any information you would need to join us on Mind Shifters is on mindshiftersacademy.org. And again, it's from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll turn on the microphone for and welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate
quite
all you do.
Quite welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is Tuesday, March the 5th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions. This is your show. And We will give Michael just a moment to dial in. We can't have two hosts at one time, so once Dr. Tim hangs up, then Michael can call in and get on the switchboard. So we'll give him just a minute there. And I invite you, as always, to go to our website, whyagain.org, and you can find, we've been doing the Enlightenment Study, and so you can go to Kaboris, and there's Enlightenment Study, and you click on that, that's all the archives. There's a lot of information under the Kaboris. There's an introduction to the Kaboris, some information about the Kaboris being source, a proper source that we can use, pictures, excuse me, pictures of the manuscript, all of the different pages, the project, the Enlightenment book, the history, Aramaicisms, the ceremony that was done at Heartland years ago, the Beatitudes, the Lord's Prayer. Under the Lord's Prayer is the interpretation of the Lord's Prayer, and there's also Michael's notes about the Lord's Prayer. You can pick up all of that. The Beatitudes, if you click on it, there was we actually did several radio shows where we talked about the Beatitudes with Mark Haddis. And so there's a page called wygan.org/Beatitudes. And so you can go to that and listen to all of those archives. I had, excuse me, tickle in the throat. I had sent Celinda yesterday the list of the show. She was asking, you know, which of the DVDs that we sell had we played on the show so you could pick up the audios. And so I sent her a list. I also included it. If you go to the radio shows in the archives, if you click on yesterday's, well, go to 2024 and then go down to March. And so then if you go to the 4th, you will see I've listed there, there's 9 different workshops that we normally sell as either DVDs or CDs that have been played on the show. And so I put the names of them there. And for instance, Aramaicisms, there's 4 parts. Communication, there's 2 parts, and so forth. So all you have to do is if you go to the website, there's a little magnifying glass up at the top. You click it, and a search bar opens, and you can type in by the title. So you type in Empowered to Heal, and it should come up with the radio shows where we played that. So all of those are listed in the notes for yesterday. There's also when we talked with Tammy, and she was asking about Brockman Cuba, we've got several things on the website for that, so I've put links in where you can pick that up easily. And we also talked yesterday about the chart for the emotional suppression and also the different cleanses for the kidneys and the liver and the gallbladder and different things. So I put links to all of that in for yesterday, so hopefully you can pick up on any of that information that you might have missed when we were talking about it yesterday. And so hopefully that will help. And hopefully Michael's not having challenges getting in. He's not on switchboard yet. But anyway, if there's anything else that we've talked about on the show and you're having difficulty in finding it on the website, if you drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know what you're looking for, and I'll be able to get you the link. So we did have one question. I'll welcome Michael first. He's with us now. And
awesome, sweetie.
We did have one
Let's
question.
Hear it.
Yeah. Okay, let me open it up here. And I did send an answer to her. But, wrong email. Hold on. Okay. So she said she was asking what Jesus would have said, you know, that in the Old Testament it talked about that it was better for God to be the leader, you know, and the Old Testament Israel was always struggling and arguing about the things that God asked them to do. And so they said they wanted to be ruled by judges and kings, like the other nations, and then things got worse for them. So she said, what's your take on Matthew 20, 25 through 26? Was Yeshua saying it's still preferable to have God as your king and not like other nations ruled by lords? And I sent back and I said, it's always better to have God as your king. And that was exactly what Yeshua was saying. But he did say, render to Caesar what is Caesar's. In other words, if you play in the world's business, then you owe taxes to Caesar. But everything, the rest, is to God. So do you have anything you would like to add to that one? And you're muted, Michael. Michael, we're not hearing you.
There we are. My screen to switch off on mute had disappeared. Yeah, you know, so much of this stays in the head and in the intellectual realm and, you know, the mind trying to figure it out, especially when the word God is used. And I think a lot of that clears up when we get rid of all the stuff that the word God means in our heads. And there's so much trash from so many people. I mean, go right back into, you know, Yeshua comes forward and he speaks about a creator that is not his, but our Father. And he speaks of it as this creator power, as love, whose good pleasure it is to give us the kingdom. And in Aramaic, the kingdom of heaven properly translates as the community of love. We want to get an Aramaic mindset here. So it's his good pleasure to give it to us, and that we've been given a sound mind. Now, if you go back into what the Old Testament Jews were trying to figure out, there's a lot of terror and trauma, hate and vengeance, and just plain old insanity. And everything that these humans had not dealt with, they projected into the brain's image of God. So God became the terrorist. God became the vengeance seeker. God became, and on and on and on it goes. Yeshua brought correction. God is love. The creator is love. So let's get rid of that word God and all the baggage that it means. So let's come back to love. Is it better to be in relationship and live your life in relationship to love, in relationship to who you are and what you're created out of? Or is it better to live in the non-being mind of hostility or fear? That's the question that I hear. And, of course, I don't think we need to answer it. I think its answer is pretty obvious. And to do that, all we have to do is clean up our own minds. And in essence, if you go, there's a passage where a group of disciples are with Yeshua. I like to bring this up often because it's such a reminder. It's a group of disciples, and basically what they say is, what do we have to do to please the Creator? You know, they're still in pleasing mode. They're still in the Old Testament. This guy's out to get us and send us to hell. What do we have to do? And Yeshua tells them. And literally half of his audience replied, this is a hard saying. Who can understand it? And grumbling, they left and never came back. And in essence, you know, the answer that was given when asked is an idiom in Aramaic. What he said is, you've got to eat my body and drink my blood. And of course, those disciples, oh, too hard to say. Well, if our interpretation today of eat my body and drink my blood is wafers and wine, what's the big deal? What is there to not understand? What's hard about it? Why would you leave if somebody said, come to a supper, come and join us for bread and wine? Obviously, there's nothing hard about that. So that's not what he was saying. It's an idiom. What does the idiom mean? In essence, you got to do your work. You've got to eat. You've got to take of the tools that I've offered you to clean up your own hostility and fear-based mind and life. And then what you'll find is you're back in relationship with what you were designed to be in relationship with, and that is the conscious active presence of love, the Creator. Who do you want to serve? So that's, and actually Jeannie and I just, this morning she came up with a quote that I thought was kind of hilarious, and let me just find it here. There's a minister. I've got his name down here, I think. Let me look just a second here. It was a minister that felt like people were not really getting what was being written in the scriptures. This guy named, the guy's name was Eugene Peterson. I don't have his time frame, but it's fairly recently. And he did a translation. He spoke Greek, and so from the Greek he did a translation. And his translation's called the Message Bible, MSG. And here's one of the things he says. The original sentence structure is very different from that of contemporary English. And so I decided, it says, to strive for the spirit of the original manuscripts, to express the rhythm of the voices, the flavor of the idiomatic expressions, and the subtle connotations of meaning that are lost in English translations. And so he quotes, and I've edited a little bit because there are some things in it that hit things that are such a hot button in today's culture that I don't even want to go there, like not my purpose. But in Romans 1:18, and again, I've edited it slightly, but this is pretty much it, but I thought it was hilarious when put into a kind of a modern-day language. So this would be another way of answering the question. Ignoring love, and wherever in this passage the word God is used, I've put the word love in so that we can get rid of the baggage of all the stuff that people have about God. But he tells people what's going to happen if they fall out of relationship with love. So he says, ignoring love leads to a downward spiral. Acts of human mistrust and wrongdoing and lying accumulate as people try to put a shroud over truth. The reality of love is plain enough. Open your eyes and there it is. By taking a long and thoughtful look at what love has created, people have always been able to see what their eyes, with their eyes, what this eternal power, which their eyes can't see, this eternal divine energy. So he offers, nobody has a good excuse. What happened to people when they ignored love was this. People, he says, knew love, this is Paul speaking, knew love perfectly well, but they trivialized themselves into silliness and confusion, so that there was neither sense nor direction left in their lives. They pretended to know it all, but were illiterate regarding life. They traded the presence of love for cheap figurines you can buy at a roadside stand. So love said, in effect, if that's what you want, that's what you get. And it wasn't long before they were living in a pig pen, smeared with filth, filthy inside and out, and all this because they traded true love for a fake God that they made. Worse followed, he says, and this is where I think it gets kind of humorous. Worse followed, a little later on. Refusing to know love, they soon didn't know how to be human either. Women didn't know how to be women. Men didn't know how to be men. Sexually confused, they abused and defiled one another. All lust, no love. And then they paid for it. Oh, how they paid for it. Emptied of love, they were loveless, worthless wretches. Since they didn't bother to acknowledge love, love quit bothering with them, run loose, and all hell broke loose. Rampant error, grabbing and grasping, vicious backstabbing. They made life hell on earth with their envy, their wanton killing, their bickering, their cheating. Look for this in the political realm. See if you can identify any of this in the political realm today. Look at them, mean-spirited, venomous, forked-tongued, love bashers, bullies, swaggerers, insufferable windbags. Any of those in the political realm today? They keep inventing new ways of wrecking lives. They ditch their parents when they get in the way. Stupid, slimy, cruel, cold-blooded. And it's not as if they don't know better. They know perfectly well. They're spitting in love's face, and they don't care. Worse yet, they hand out prizes to those who do these things worst, or best, whichever way you want to look at it. Thank you for that question, because this was something that came from a totally different conversation, and Jeannie had found this translation, which I'd never seen before, And so I went into it, and I was just kind of looking through it. And it's like, this guy has put it into some pretty, you know, present language. And when you listen to it in that present language, as opposed to the antiquated languages we usually look at the scriptures through, it's like, well, this just describes what's going on in the world today. That's the game. Are we ready to go back to, are we ready to face what's in us that's unlike love and go back to the truth of who we are, really, truly functioning as human beings? And you listen to this passage, and then we've shared before a French archbishop from back around 1700. His name was François Fenelon. And I'd like to repeat this every once in a while, just as a reminder, you know, and none of this was written for you and I. It goes back over 300 years. Excuse me, I'm just looking it up. Fenelon. François Fenelon. So 300 or so years ago, here's how François Fenelon described what he discovered about himself and what each person who chooses to do their work is going to discover. In just one second, So here's what Fenelon wrote, and this is back somewhere around 1700. I'm not sure exactly what year, but give or take 10 years. As the light increases, we see ourselves to be worse than we thought. We're amazed at our former blindness as we see issuing forth from the depths of our heart a whole swarm of shameful feelings like filthy reptiles crawling from a hidden cave. We never could have believed that we'd harbored such things as we stand aghast as we watch them gradually appear. But while our faults diminish, the light by which we see them waxes brighter and we are filled with horror. Bear in mind for your comfort that we only perceive our malady when the cure begins. So here's a man 300 years ago that's saying, you got to dig in and do your work. When Yeshua said in response to the question, what do we do to please the Creator? And he said, you must eat my body and drink my blood. He was giving a metaphor for you must clean up your mind. You must do your work, the work that I've done. So eat of the tools, take of the tools that I have offered you and work through what you've got. And half of them were just too hard to say, I'm not going there. I'm out of here. And that's what the mind that comes out of that pre-correction time. A lot of people like to talk of it as a new dispensation or a new covenant, but when you think about it, it's a story, it's being lost in a story, which many people want to stick to yet today, of a total, complete projection of everything non-human in our human minds that are projected into our mind's image of the Creator. Basically, the story of the Old Testament. And the Eshel comes along and he gives a correction of everything. And some people are trying to, make those two things consistent. You can't be in a vengeful, punishing, hell-creating Creator and even start to think about a man who says, our Father, not mine, but ours, who is love. You can't put those two together. You got to go for the correction if you're going to go or not. So that would be my offering. Pick up, do your work. That's what it takes. So that's my thought on that regard. And Miss Cindy, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room? I know Joan said she was going to be on today.
She is not on yet. And Susan's hand's up, but I don't know if it's left over. Oh, she just answered me. She does have a hand up. I wasn't sure if it was still left over from him. So welcome, Susan, 610. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I didn't talk on Tim's show this morning. And Jeannie, before I ask my question, congratulations on your book. I love seeing it posted. Just let us know when we can get our copy.
I will. It's I've got several people editing, of course, like Michael's editing for content. I've got one lady who is an English teacher, and she's editing it for grammar. She wrote me yesterday and said, you must have been absent from school the day they talked about conjunctions. Anyway.
That's funny.
And I said, that's fine. I said, I appreciate all the edits. I said, so go for it. So anyway, she said
You're
she was kind of fearful. But
she was afraid she was going to lose her head.
Yeah, I said, no. I said, seriously. I said, you know, I wasn't writing it with grammar in mind. I was just getting it out. And I said, so definitely, you know, send me feedback. And so as soon as I get all of the feedback back, and I think I'm going to add one more chapter, but then it is ready to find a, either I'm going to self-publish, I think that's what I'm going to do, and find a printer and go for it.
That's so great. Well, you know, don't feel embarrassed or ashamed for using copy editors. Everybody needs a copy editor. And the ones who complain and say they don't need it are really, you just can't do it all. It's another set of eyes or several sets of eyes. It's just the best thing before you publish it. Yeah.
And I've got a friend reading it, and I said, you know, she's not into the work or anything much. I've introduced part of it to her, but anyway, I told her to read it with the thought in mind, does it flow? You know, have I lost you somewhere along the way, or does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got different people looking at it from different aspects. So hopefully when it all comes back together, then we'll be ready to rock. So I'm excited.
So exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks.
So, I know when I was finishing, why is this happening to me again? I actually had about 10 different sets of eyes that were giving me edits. And completed the book. I was actually going to India. And the morning before I got on the plane to go to India, I got the final copy of the manuscript, signed off on it, printed, took it with me, and on the plane to India, I'm reading and I'm marking up edits. And as soon as I landed, I put a call back to say, stop the presses. And I spent another 3 months editing.
That is the way it goes. I know it's never ending. But, Michael, you've got your hand on or your finger on a topic that's been on my mind, and I've been wanting to call the show for several days, but it didn't seem to fit into what you were talking about, and also my level of upset was so great that I really wasn't being reasonable. I had to do a lot of work myself. I've got this quote. You've probably heard it. It's Charles Baudelaire. He says, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he did not exist. Well, of course, you've got Fenelon, and you've got Carl Jung. You've got people saying, it's in us, folks. We're the ones. But then, and Tim Hayes has been encouraging us to listen to some podcasts having to do with dealing with difficult people, narcissistic friendships, who it's going south, and it's just unsalvageable, or if it isn't, ways are being offered to communicate so that a good relationship can be established. What I'm dealing with in my life is grandson Jacob again, and he has gotten to the point again. He insists that he's healthy. He's finishing school. He's getting A's in school. But Tim and I have told him for months that when he's finished school, he's on his own. If he needs something, yes, but we're not planning to pay his rent, no more tuition, no more, you know, garage park, no more school, no more food. You know, he's going to be on his own. It's time to spread his wings. And, of course, if he's trying to do that and getting a job that doesn't cover everything, we're in for dialogue. We're here. We're never going to leave. But he's been using, as I told you, he's been using weed and alcohol. And it's gotten to the point where if he weren't so coherent at school, I would think he's having another mental breakdown. I wrote him a love letter. It was my responsibility communication letter par excellence. I worked hard on it. And it was, to my mind, it was loving and encouraging, but also challenging. We cannot pay these bills for you when you are using, when you are still using. We don't want to free up money that you might earn so that you can spend it on that sort of thing. We can't send
right,
you any
right.
money at all until yep. this is taken care of. I've been tempted to send you copies of the texts. I have now blocked him from phone calls and texts because the ugliness of it and the twisting, the way he took my
yep.
letter was so amazing that I really began to wonder if Baudelaire was right, that there is somebody out there, there is a demon out there who, and the demon is similar between one person and another. When they're in this mode, they're a lot alike. They do the same things.
Yes.
And so I've just been in this state of, you know, having to thank God for the tools because I am really fine. But I do wake up in the night and have flashbacks of early childhood violence and all that stuff. And I know we're not supposed to keep telling our story. They just pop into my mind, this helpless, cornered.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, the feeling of just.
If you're bringing
totally
that forward and then bringing love present to it, that's what the healing process looks like.
Well, I'm telling you. So my question is there any possibility that the devil might actually both be in us and also a separate entity?
Well, I think that when somebody lives in the world of denial,
mm-hmm.
remember our definition of denial. When I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something inside of me, I'm in denial.
Right.
Then that person, in order to believe that something outside is cause, has to dissociate from the content of their own minds. They will then populate their minds with those devils.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll put those devils, those things they've dissociated from, into the brain's image of everybody else, and everybody else becomes a problem in their lives.
Yeah.
So if we go to Satan, Aramaic,
mm-hmm.
Satan again, the resister, one who
the
misleads.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I say, when you write what you've obviously consciously worked on out of great devotion to your grandson, I think what you've given that boy is just amazing. And out of great devotion, you've written to him out of love and respect for him and support for him to turn it around and make you the problem. He's he's in denial, and sooner or later, he's going to have to face his own demons. But the demons are nothing but the personification of those energies he's dissociated from within himself, which, you know, as we've talked about before, some of it's been inherited. And he's had lots of reasons to keep playing it out.
That's
and,
all true.
You know, they're going to, anybody in that posture, until they can start to own it, is going to have somebody that's the devil in their lives. And, you know, if you're the what he perceives as the source of his stress, having no idea that his stress is caused by his goal for you to be responsible for his life,
mm-hmm.
being perceived as a source of his stress, he's going to turn it on you. And that's sadly classic alcoholism and drug addiction. And sadly,
mm-hmm.
the resolution of that looks like hitting the bottom, whatever that looks like, you know, which can be, you know, extremely traumatic and dangerous to Oh, like Luke did. Oh, waking up. You put a lot of energy, a lot of money into Luke for him to have this revelation that, I need to clean up alcohol use in my life.
Mm-hmm. Which leads me to a quick question, but it's an aside. I haven't even asked Luke, but he is a master speaker. He is being invited to speak at forums and AA retreats and all kinds of things. And I wondered
if
he would agree to talk on the radio show about his experience, which involves the use of a tool just once at a crucial moment among many other loving interventions of different kinds. But he has tremendous respect for you because you really were, the tool was there at a crucial moment. And, you don't even have to answer that. And I was going to ask Dr. Tim if he would like to interview him, but I haven't even asked Luke. I mean, who knows, But
I think it'd be awesome to have a conversation with Luke. I think that'd be fabulous and have him share his story, what shifted, what happened for him. I think that'd be very cool.
That would be so great. Yeah, well, great. I'll tell him that. But I'll get off in a second, but I'm not ready to let this evil Satan topic go. What you say, I agree with, and if I totally take it in, I get my full agency back, that I have tools and the ability or even just the hope of not sinking into this darkness. My question is, though, the power of the darkness is unbelievable, indescribable.
The power of denial is unlimited.
Oh.
The power of denial is unlimited. And, go ahead.
Go ahead.
You have to say.
Just that it doesn't seem possible that we create that within ourselves. It just doesn't seem possible. It's too
huge.
That's
how powerful we are as creators.
God, it's an amazing thought. Just amazing thought. Can't get my mind around it yet.
Yeah. And the quote that you started out with about the devil's greatest trick is to convince us he doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I would turn that quote 180 degrees around. I don't know who, I know I've run into that quote before, and I don't remember who it was that said it, but I bet if we go investigate his life, he had some pretty heavy traumatic stuff going on, and he had somebody to blame. But I would take that quote and reverse it. The greatest trick the devil ever played on us was to convince us that he even exists. And now anybody who doesn't want to own it can just say the devil made me do it. They've got the perfect fall guy. Look who did it to me. I didn't have a vicious mouth toward my spouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was the devil that made me do it. See, the devil's making all this happen.
That's very interesting.
I mean, that's the biggest excuse that's going on. And people who don't want to take responsibility, that it's a really convenient thing. You see, well, it's not my fault. See, the devil had me.
So this leads to another question. It was Charles Baudelaire, the French author, who said that.
Right.
We can look it up. Now, what was my question? I forgot my question. Oh, darn, it was a good one, too. It might come back to me, but...
So we'll go review it. The greatest trick ever played by the quote-unquote devil is to convince us that such an entity even exists.
Okay,
and
I got my question back. Thank you.
Okay, good. Resonance in the mind.
I have heard, I don't know where from, that it takes a liar to recognize that someone is lying. And I just don't think that's true. I wondered if what you have to say about it. What?
I think it takes one that honors truth to recognize when someone is not speaking truth. I would put that on the other side of the equation. I mean, if one, is going to get into the devious aspect of the liar, then, it takes one to know one. It would be a fairly true statement. But if you're really in a space where your life is about honoring truth and someone comes along with a lie, it's going to be easy to spot the deception and that this is not in alignment with truth.
Mm. Good. Good, because one of the things that Jacob is accusing me of as being a liar, and from the bottom of my soul, I am not intending to lie to him, and I think, did I lie? Have I lied? What did I lie about? Well, it's, once again, it's changing our minds. We did say, we'll extend your rent for 3 months, and they don't allow it, so we said, we'll extend it for the 1 month they do allow. And we became liars. But actually, we just changed our mind because the deal was different, and he was using. So we have a, yeah. Okay. I tend to sort of, you know, think I'm the bad guy until I can remind myself that I don't have to go there anymore yet.
Yeah, and it sounds like Jacob, what Jacob is doing is admitting that he uses lies in order to get what he wants, and that's about as classic alcohol and drug addict as you can get. And, you know, if you look down through the all the literature about alcohol, the alcoholic leaves in their wake a trail of bodies, people whose lives are shattered because the alcoholic mind, the level of denial is legion, and any tool they've got to get to the next drink or the next blame game, they'll use. There's no ability to honor truth. And certainly when you start to hold the alcoholic accountable, they're going to pull out all the stops. And my support for you would be stand your ground. Just stand it and, you know, Jacob, you can do all the yelling and screaming and blaming and cursing you want. It's not going to change anything. We're here to support you, and our support of you right now looks like you need to be accountable for your life, and we're not going to supply you money to buy drugs and alcohol. And that's just like, you know, you can forget the rest of the conversation. We're just not doing it.
Yeah.
And again, in heading toward the bottom of the barrel, it can be dangerous.
And I know.
You know, who else is this young man around with that kind of language and that kind of verbiage and that kind of blame? You know, who's around in his life that, you know, wouldn't take to the kinds of things he's saying to you so kindly and might strike back? You know, I mean, holding him accountable could look like tragedy. But, you know, if you don't hold him accountable, it's a definite tragedy.
Oh, yeah.
Or pretty much. It's probably 95 percentile. It'll be tragedy if you don't hold them accountable.
Right.
But there can be a tragic outcome to holding someone that deeply ensconced in denial accountable for their behavior. And I hear that you want to maintain your connection with him, but I'd certainly support you limiting the amount of abuse that you'll take to zero.
It's down to zero. He has found that Messenger through Facebook is still, I can't block that unless I delete the app altogether. And so sometimes his last communication was using that, and I read it, and it took a while to crawl out of that, you know, good old tools. But
you can block him on Facebook.
You can?
So he can't use Messenger, yes. Yeah, you can just go and block him on Facebook. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You don't need to put up with that.
Okay, I'll figure out how to do that. Well, my daughter has had to do the same thing. In fact, she called me and said, Mom, it's time to block him. And he has been sending three-way texts to her new husband, who is the most gentle, loving, understanding person, and to her and to me. For some reason, he wants all of us hear what he has to say, which has protected all three of us in a way, because we think, well, he's talking to you now. But anyway, she said, Mom, we've got to stop. But she hates to do that because he has no money, and she wants him to eat. So she might text him and say, do you need food money? I'll get a gift certificate for you. I mean, I think in a way she's still enabling him, but that's the best she can do right now.
Yeah, and I understand that.
Very, very. Yeah. Anyway, Michael, I don't need to drag this out more. Thank you so much. I almost called you for a session, but I thought, I know what this stuff is. The tools are so good. You can still feel pretty lousy even when you're using them, though.
Yeah, well, and you can feel lousy because you have thought disorders that create feelings of lousy. That's the only reason you'll
That's
ever feel
true.
Lousy.
Yeah.
So,
I do agree.
We can do that with anything and anybody.
Yeah, that's true.
And if I'm feeling lousy, there's my next piece of work.
Touché, Michael.
There's my next thought disorder to be removed.
All right, yeah.
Thank you so much. I'll remind you, I've shared this before, but I'll remind you that one of the things that really worked for me, especially when it came to hostility coming up, was that just the intellectual recognition that hostility means my mind is using corrupt data and I'm mentally ill when that's happening. And just saying to myself, this is my mental illness. When I want to blame somebody, this is my mental illness. And when I can own that, I can. You can make huge leaps when you can own that.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah.
So holding the space for that young man.
Thanks.
He sounds pretty brutal.
Thank you, Jeannie. Unbelievable.
All right, dear heart.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Thank
I hear you.
So much.
All righty. Yeah. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
And you have another hand up.
Let's say hello.
It is Miss Cammy, 618. You're on the air.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
You're loud and clear. Welcome.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to speak to the caller that just hung up. I think her name was Susan.
Go for it. That's Susan, yes.
Is that accurate?
Susan, this is Cammy. Cammy, this is Susan.
Hi, Susan. I just want to commend you for stopping the enabling. As a recovering alcoholic myself, I just celebrated a year sober last week. And
yay!
If I would have had somebody to stop enabling me and my drinking, I would have been sober a long time ago. I had agoraphobia. I wouldn't leave the house to get alcohol, but my husband would bring it for me, you know, being the kind-hearted soul that he is, because he didn't know. And I just want to commend you so much and for holding love for your daughter, who is not able to stop it completely at this point. I just want to say, yay, you. That's all.
Powerful. Thank you, Cammy.
Thank you,
appreciate you.
Thanks. I hope you have a great day.
Maybe Susan has a question for you, Cammy.
Well, Susan, more than welcome.
Hi, Cammy.
Oh, I didn't know we were both on.
I was mute. I was, I got my connection back. Thanks for the kind words. And thanks for saying it right now because, of course, you know, this kid has no financial resources. Well, he has a choir, believe it or not, a singing job in a choir on Sundays. And he gets $75.
So he has financial resources.
Well, he has 1 week, $75 a week of resources.
Yeah.
Notice,
Susan, that you can turn that into, your mind can turn that into, he has no resources. He has them. He doesn't have to take it from you. And he probably has many other resources that if his time, intelligence, money, and energy weren't being locked into alcohol and drugs, he would be able to create his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
and
a good thing to remember.
Yeah.
Okay, that's very helpful, actually, because I have seen him as kind of helpless. He's a little bit autistic. He has ADHD, and man, he used them as an excuse for doing what he does. I'm different.
And he's brilliant.
From people. And he is brilliant. And he's talented.
Knows
Michael,
exactly how to con you.
Yep. Never knew an alcoholic or a drug addict that wasn't very talented at making sure they got it and keeping that stuff down. Whatever I can do to not deal with who I am.
Mm-hmm.
This life that I'm living, sort of, you know, and you get sober and do this work and life is wonderful.
God.
So, and this
hear.
Can be for your family, you know, the whole family, not just you. And I just am so glad you're here and you're doing it, girl.
Thanks, Tammy.
And it might be useful, Susan, to drop him a note about how capable you know he is. And you're glad
that
he has. Remind him that you're aware that he has this $75 job that he can go and just sing and walk out with $75 every week, which is would take care of his basic food needs. And if he spends it in a reasonable way, it will take care of his living accommodations aren't all expenses. And remind him or maybe just acknowledge, and I know that you have many other opportunities like that, and I support you taking them.
Good.
Can I? Good. I don't know. I think as a social worker, I would give him resources. I'd say, look, here's resources for food. Here's resources for housing. I'm assuming he's couch surfing. Just from not having any income
Good
at
thought.
All. Or, and give him
well,
those resources and say, here you go. You know, if he's on the spectrum, he probably, you know, maybe doesn't have those capabilities to know how to access those resources. And with those diagnoses, he can access a lot of them.
So community services.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Shelter, alcohol rehab, you know, food, everything he needs.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
I would be willing
and
to
a whole
help you
community
find
right here supporting
him. Yeah, and I would be willing to find resources, help you find resources for him if you would like.
That's so great, Tammy. He's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He has an apartment through May, and then he's probably going to go. If it's going the way, I know he's terrified of being on the street. And my daughter has said the only support we'll give you for housing is if you go into a rehab program and tackle this habit. And I imagine he'll say yes.
And is he a veteran by chance?
No, he's only 22. He's
okay.
Just a college
kid. Just checking because there's a whole lot of resources out there for veterans.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll check this out. And I don't know, Michael, can we go through you for me to get what I find? Or
if it works, if I've got permission from both of you, I'll pass your phone numbers to each other and you can be in touch.
Sure. Great.
Works for me.
Cool. All right.
So,
awesome.
Tammy,
if
you contact me and leave a message, because otherwise I block unknown calls. So.
Okay. No, I understand.
I'll send you her number.
Great.
When we get off phone, I don't have a great record at sending you texts, Susan's, but I'll try that.
No, not your fault. Not your fault. Because
I don't get what's going on between our phones. It's crazy. But anyway.
I know.
All right, ladies. Nice work.
See Michael.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks,
okay.
Michael.
Take care.
Thanks.
All right, blessings. Appreciate you both.
Thanks.
Right, bye-bye. I am in deep appreciation for this whole community that we have. It's pretty awesome. Deep appreciation. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything else happening in the chat room?
There are no other hands up. We're down to 9 minutes. Yinka had, I had sent her the book, and she said she planned on reading this weekend. And she's offered to create a PowerPoint and do a session on the Global Book Club when we're ready to publish and advertise it. So that's awesome. Thank you, Yinka.
Awesome. Very cool. Congratulations, sweetie.
Thank you.
And is Joan out there? Joan had texted me, and we talked yesterday, or we texted yesterday, and she said she would be on today to complete our conversation from Friday. Okay, well, I hope everything's okay with her. And we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We only have 9 minutes. Does somebody else have a question? Press one.
Yeah, rather than starting into a whole new topic, or getting back to the Enlightenment book, which I'm looking forward to getting back to, and I'm delighted that it's created as much conversation as it has as well. So we get to interact on this material. So if you're out there in listener land and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our calling number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you're listening to the show. And if you're listening to the show directly on your phone and you push 1, that will put a hand up in the control panel and we'll be having a conversation. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? 563-999-3581. And everybody's just going to be silent, eh?
Apparently so.
Well, then, I have a thought to share. Give me just a moment to find it. I want to go back for a moment again to this, the whole idea of the Aramaic teachings of this man named Yeshua. And I just want to put a reminder in the space that most of the world believes that that which has been written about him is about theology and religion. And my offering is, and that's one of the mistakes, because it keeps people in that arena, or tends to. But what we have in the Aramaic teachings of man Yeshua is one of the most profound textbooks on physics, on physiology, on psychology and genetics. And most people have been fooled. They don't even know. But that's what it's about. And one of the most profound pieces of the puzzle that you'll find out of that Aramaic language, when you bypass the Greek translations, you know, we hear the Greeks telling us in the book of John, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. And they equate that with a man named Yeshua. But that's a total mistranslation, if you can even call it a translation when it comes from the Greek. I don't really categorize what comes out of the Greek as translation work. It's actually interpretation. But in the original Aramaic, what those words say is, when we properly quote it, is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. And we could literally take that word flesh and translate it as chemistry. So when I recognize that this is about text, about how to consciously live and understand the energy system in which you live, move, and have your being, to understand the rules that govern it, and to be able to apply those rules to your life, and then recognizing that there are tools for achieving consciously living within this energy system. And recognizing that it is an energy system that we live in, and that if we put into that system on any level, whether it's with our thoughts, through our skin, through our mouths, what goes into our mouths or what comes out of our mouths, if we put qualities of energy into the system that don't belong in the system, then the system will begin to disintegrate. Each person's life proceeds according to their own thoughts. And if one suffers from a thought disorder, if one's holding mind energy that's disintegrative relative to their own minds and bodies, then that energy, that mind energy that's stored, will create disease. The whole technology of forgiveness in Aramaic is about the removal of our diseases. Salvation. The root of the word salvation means healing. It's not about, you know, being saved from some demon out there, as the Greeks have made it out. Like, we've had this whole mouthful of puke from Greek philosophy, you know, where the gods raped their own mothers and killed their own children, plugged in as God. That's one of the reasons why I spoke earlier about, let's get rid of this whole concept of God. I'm not saying get rid of God. I'm not saying get rid of Creator. I'm saying all of the mind garbage that people have. Because most of the mind garbage came from the Greeks and the Greek misinterpretations and the ignorance of some of the Old Testament writings, where projection was the game. It was all God's fault. Coming to the correction of Yeshua, that not only are we literally made in the image and likeness of love, but love is the creator. And when we put energies into the structure that don't match that, then the structure begins to fall apart. If you engage in mind energy that is integrative in nature, then whatever your diseases are, they're going to start to disappear. And if we engage in disintegrative energies, then those energetic patterns will literally become physiology. So according to our thoughts, according to the mind energy, we contribute with each thought we think to either a serene or an hostile projection of the world. According to our thoughts, with each one, we set up whether we live in serenity or we live in trauma. And then according to those thoughts, we'll bring about, because thought is creative, we'll bring about the results. And we're here to support the healing of that dynamic in the world. That's been so full. So delighted to share this time with you. Thank each of you for your questions and thoughts and your support. Have a blessed one. Lots of love. Take care. Bye-bye.